What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
And this week, we are hitting you up with another Crypt pick. We are celebrating the launch of our very first book, Baby's First Book, the end of this month, November 26th, Cocktails from the Crypt. It is 60 cocktails inspired by 60 horror movies, and one of them is today's movie that we are chatting about, The Exorcist.
Yeah, that's right. We got a drink in this book called Pazuzu's Punch.
And it's not just one drink. It is 8 drinks in one, so you can share it with friends or, you know, you could drink them all.
I thought you can share them with the priests that you bring in. You, there's enough in this punch bowl.
There's enough spirits in your body. You need a whole punch.
Oh, okay. That's good. We are Legion and we need a whole punch. It's a delicious drink. It's also got a nice exorcist-styled color to it, and we'll tell you all about it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, if you've ever wanted to drink some liquid pea soup, no, this is
not,
pea soup. It is not pea
soup. It is just a cool green, okay? We'll say it right now. In case anybody was worried, it's just a fun, neon-ish green color. And you'll hear all about it later on. Before we get into this week's episode, I mean, damn, The Exorcist, doesn't need an intro. You've probably, at the very least, heard about this movie.
People have seen The Exorcist, John.
I would expect you to. This is also one of the rare movies that we've already talked about on the podcast before. Years ago at this point. I think we paired it with Silence of the Lambs. I think the idea was that it was an Academy Award winning horror double feature.
Yeah, because this is one of the only horror movies that has been recognized by the Academy. I think it won Best Screenplay?
I think it won a lot.
Score.
I think it was a bit of a sweep.
No, I think it got two. I think I got screenplay and score.
Really?
I think it was nominated for Best Picture, though, which is like, oh, we got nominated. Should have won. Got nominated.
Oh, a fucking movie made like $1 billion. I looked it up, actually. The budget of the movie, which was crazy. It was $12 million in 1973. It should have only been five. I mean, adjusted for inflation, that's $85 million. And it made, adjusted for inflation, $1 billion. $1 billion.
I mean, it's pretty good movie.
It's a pretty fucking good movie. That's the thing. That's what's great about it. It might be hard to try and find new things to say about it, but every single time we watch this movie, I'm convinced that it's the best horror movie ever made.
Well, I mean, it doesn't help that, so recording this early November, we watched this Halloween night. This was our Halloween night watch. So the vibes were high, but also the expectations were high on making it a really great movie night. And holy shit, does this movie always deliver?
Always.
So good.
You ask me in 2 weeks from now what I think some of the best movies ever made are, or what my favorite horror movies are, my five-star picks. I might not say The Exorcist, but every time I watch it, I'm like, this is a fucking masterpiece.
It's just because it feels expected, but then when you...
It's the basic bitch answer?
Yes. It is the pumpkin spice latte on October 1st.
It really is.
But it deserves to be.
Okay, so what are our three good things? Like, as people who have seen this movie 100 times, and it keeps getting funnier, what are our three good things about The Exorcist?
One of the greatest things about this movie for me is, and I'm just going to say, like, full sweep the performances. All of the characters are really fleshed out. The actors know who they're portraying, and they are interesting, and you want to watch them, and you want to see their story. Like, you want Chris to figure out what's going on with her daughter. You want Father Karras to figure out what's going on with his faith. And the performances are just phenomenal.
Yeah, you're so invested. You're just like, is he gonna find a nice place for his mom to live? Good thing number two, this is something I bring up every opportunity I can. Incredible nightmare sequence, like real to life nightmare sequence, not just a nightmare sequence that looks like a Salvador Dali painting that came to life, but like a true nightmare that you had that they somehow beamed into the movie screen.
Yeah, it's got that sense of like wading in water and you can't get to the things you need to get to.
There's literally a scene where he's running and you can't get to it.
And he's shouting and his voice isn't making any noise and you're just like, oh, those are dreams I haven't woken up from a couple times.
Yep. Had one of those nightmares the other night.
Apparently we were getting eaten by turtles.
Oh, don't tell him. Don't tell him what it was.
It was a real dark night.
All right, and our last good thing. The Exorcist has an incredible theme song, or at the very least, a very memorable theme song. It's one of those songs that had a life before this movie, but it was completely taken over by The Exorcist.
Wait, this song existed before The Exorcist?
Yeah, this was just a song someone wrote. Like the full version
is it like
25 minutes?
Or
it's called Tubular Bells.
And it's not The Exorcist song?
No, and it's partly responsible for, was it Russell Brand? What's the guy's name? The guy who started Virgin Records that then became Virgin Everything and is now like Virgin Space Rides. Like, this was like one of the biggest successes that he originally had, was signing the artist who made this song and putting it out.
What was the audience for Tubular Bells before it came out?
That's the funny thing. The guy who wrote it, I did not expect to be talking about this. The guy who wrote it was a bit of a recluse, or at the very least just like a shy guy who just made music at home with synthesizers. And they got him to come out and do a live performance, and he hated it. He never wanted to do it again. He never wanted to play the song. He just wanted to make his music quietly at home and have nobody bug him about it. And it was like pulling teeth. I think is it Russell Brand?
No, it's not.
What's his name?
I don't know.
So, okay, Mr. Virgin had to like give him his car. Like, here, as payment, I'll give you my car. Just come do
it. Why do you know this? And why are we going here?
Because I'm good at trivia.
Wow. So...
But despite that, the movie is super scary, despite having what I think is a very silly theme song. That's what I wanted
to
say.
Why are you saying that that's your good thing then?
Because it's terrifying. I can think the sound design, the sound design in this movie is utterly horrifying.
I thought you were going to say bad, and then I was just going to be like, why are we here? What are we doing?
No, not at all. You know, most horror movies are scary because of the score, The Omen, Jason Takes Manhattan. These are all movies that have given us nightmares because of that haunting score.
Well, The Shining, and that's got some classics in it that aren't written for The Shining. Now your brain is just like, oh, this is the song from The Shining.
Yeah. And The Exorcist has a very silly theme song, but
incredible. It's not silly. It's good.
Incredible sound design and atmosphere, and it just gets in your goddamn bones.
I will say, watching this time, the theme song, the like dun 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 dun, dun whatever
Tubular Bells, yeah,
yeah, doesn't appear as much as I remember in my mind.
Okay, well, this is the other thing. So this year, we got a new copy of The Exorcist. We got it on 4K because it was on sale at Walmart. Heads up, it might still be on sale. Go run and get yourself a cheap copy. It comes with both the theatrical cut and the director's cut, like the 2000s director's cut. And we decided to watch the theatrical cut.
Because we'd never seen it.
And there's a really good chance that song... I don't think we have. I think this is my first time seeing the theatrical cut. And there's a pretty good chance.
Yeah, but if you'd seen it before 2000, that would have been the cut that you saw.
I didn't.
Okay.
I remember renting it because it was like such a big deal. It came out on VHS. I went to the video store. This is back when my mom still worked at the video store, so I had a sweet hookup.
This is the longest good thing we have ever done in my whole life. I'm never giving John coffee again before we record.
I tried to move on. I'd already tried to move on.
All right, continue comparing the theatrical to the director's cut.
All I was trying
good thing
to say
about the silly score.
I was trying to say that I think maybe in the director's cut that the song gets used more.
Does it?
I don't know. Anyway, we're gonna play the trailer for The Exorcist.
Somebody's gonna take a deep inhale.
I'm gonna take a huge breath, and we're gonna talk to you about the differences between the theatrical cut and the director's cut. And I've got a couple questions that I want to ask Kim that have always bugged me about this movie that I'm dying to get answers.
Yes.
Okay. That was fast.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness. Nobody expected it. Nobody believed it. And nothing could stop it.
There are no experts. You probably know as much about possession as most priests. Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
I'm telling you that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now, I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
The one hope, the only hope, The Exorcist.
So,
The Exorcist,
directed by William Friedkin.
What year is this?
1973.
Good year.
Is currently sitting at an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, with an audience rating of 87%.
I saw that. One of the rare films where the audience rating is higher, but critically, great, like, well-received movie.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I met anybody who was like, oh, bad movie, not good. But the rating would assume so.
Yeah, I was expecting like 95 sweep.
People accidentally uploaded the review for Exorcist Believer on The Exorcist. That's had to be what happened. Letterboxd.
The Heretic.
It also has a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. And I already mentioned what the box office and budget were.
It cost a lot and it made more.
Yeah, so this movie was definitely plagued with some issues during production. I think they originally were like, yeah, 85 shooting days. Great, we got this. We're going to go to Iran. We're going to come back. We're going to shoot on some stairs. We're going to fridge up a little girl's bedroom. And then bim, bam, we're done. And then a bird flew
bim, bam, we're done.
A bird flew into some tech and like lit the set on fire.
They're like, oh, shit.
Everybody's family members were dying and they had to keep taking leave to, you know, like go to funerals.
Do you think part of the reason that the movie's quote-unquote cursed and that lots of bad stuff kept happening is just that the shoot went so long?
Probably. Life happens.
Right? Like, in a 9-month period with hundreds of people under your employ, like, of course some shit's gonna go... Like, oh, somebody got a cold on a day where it was bad for them to get a cold.
Yeah, the Wikipedia just goes like, a filmmaker's third daughter died of dysentery or some shit.
Also, some of it's also like, these old actors that we got later died of natural causes.
Cameraman 92 cut off his toe.
There was that doctor who did eventually murder his mom.
Yeah,
right?
That one technician was a bit of a murderer.
There was somebody in a lab coat in this movie who's definitely maybe still behind bars. I'm not entirely sure.
But definitely did some murder-diddly-erdly.
It happened. Yeah.
Don't say it like that. We gotta chill out.
We're
against murder on this podcast.
Is that something we have to say?
And curses.
I guess that's true. Like, as a podcast that talks a lot about people dying and saying, yay, we do have to occasionally.
Oh, we like it fictional.
At least once a year. You're like, not cool.
No, bud.
Yeah, no, it's nuts that the part of the part of the filming that didn't go haywire or cost a lot or get crazy was when they went to like a completely other country.
Well, except for the Pazuzu statue got shipped to Hong Kong instead of Iran, and that also caused a delay.
Was it Iran or Iraq?
Iraq, sorry.
Okay, yeah, Iraq. Does that mean they all had to just hang out in the Middle East, like at a bazaar or something?
Probably.
That's fun. Okay, well, that sucks. Man, the world was so different back then.
Not really.
No?
No, it was just ballsier, I think. Today, we wouldn't be going to...
I was thinking about shipping complications.
Oh, no, we still have those. We have lots of those. Think of the pandemic and that one ship that got stuck sideways for like 6 months and everybody's like, but I need a mattress.
Or those fucking Blu-rays that I got from Criterion that still aren't here yet.
It's been a week, John. It'll be okay.
They were supposed to be here in 3 days. Okay, so The Exorcist. Great movie, guys. Goddamn, I love this movie. On 4K. Wow, incredible. I always poo-pooed 4K. I'm like, we don't need that bullshit. We still watch movies on VHS. Who gives a shit about 4K? And then I happen to get a 4K player for free, and it's changed my life.
As somebody who doesn't have 20/20 vision anymore, it puts a lot of pressure on me.
You were so upset about this.
Because I don't take good care of my glasses, and they have scratches on them.
You kept remarking like, oh my god, this is the most crystal clear movie I've ever seen, but also my glasses are scratched. Like, you had to keep looking at the movie sideways.
I had to, like, pull my glasses down and, like, watch the movie like an angry librarian.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I need new glasses.
We gotta get you some new glasses.
But Blu-rays.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, the sound is definitely, like, the thing that always stands out the most to me when we're watching, rewatching these movies that we've gotten upscaled. And, like, the haunting, creepy sounds happening in the background are fucking awesome. And we don't have a crazy setup at home. You know, like we've got a nice TV and we've got a sound bar. That's it. But it's still like, I feel like I'm hearing shit that I'd never heard before. And I think it's just because it's all just louder. I think it's all when it comes down to it's all just louder. But even like the subway train going through the tunnel or the choof of all of the X-rays sliding up and shit, like it gets to you.
Yeah, that is true. That the editing is so good combined with the sound editing.
Hell yeah.
That's where you find the jump scares are in this movie. Like, it's not a jump scary movie. It's a very unsettling, get under your skin movie. But yeah, those two specific moments you're talking about, like the slide going up and like just taking over the entire screen and the sound there, it just gets in your ear and festers in such a yummy little way.
up until Reagan gets fully possessed and like her skin's cracking and her color and she's changing color. And she's got that gross demon tongue. the scariest thing that happens is like a candle sort of getting a big flame, right? Like if we're talking quote-unquote horror movie scares, it's just Ellen Burstyn in the attic maybe looking for a rat, right? Everything else is doom and gloom.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
dread.
If you're talking about like physically, visually, objectively, yes. But I would argue that this movie does such a great job getting you into the headspace of the character. Like, you are so on side with Chris McNeil that when she's having that dinner party so early on in the movie and everybody's like just enjoying their, you know, like their sing song, we got rid of the drunk guy, we're all just having a ball, and her daughter just starts peeing on the floor, and it's just a not normal thing to be doing socially. That for me is when things really turn, because you're just like, something's not right here.
Yeah. And she apologizes too by saying that she's been sick. The time jumps in this movie are crazy.
This movie does things in a 70s way that we don't really have anymore, where stuff happens off camera. Like,
yeah.
Karis's mom dies off camera. Mm. Time passes off camera. Like, when we finally see Reagan fully possessed, she's been fully possessed for the characters for at least a few weeks.
Yeah.
Like, we come in and it's just like, wow, this escalated.
The funny thing about that, too, is that Chris McNeil, her character, is in town in Washington because she's shooting a movie. She's an actress. Do you think she's also on some production that's going crazy long? Like, she's been there for 9 months or something? Like, how long have they been in Washington? For her to for us to have all these time jumps and for her daughter to just progressively keep getting worse.
Maybe it was a series.
Oh, you think it was television?
I know, I don't know.
Okay.
But I also do, so like there's things you pick up on having seen this movie so many times. They sold their house and they're kind of in between houses.
Mm, that's right.
So she's rented this house and I'm assuming it's kind of an extended rental. Like,
yeah.
I think she was planning on staying here a little longer because she was talking about how she was going to take Reagan overseas once her school finished. So I think she's just waiting for the school year to end.
That's right, yeah.
Or I don't know how Reagan's attending school. Or
yeah, so like the shoot probably finished at some point, but we're just staying here for the sake of being
maybe.
Here.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it all happens over 3 months. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who fucking knows?
So one thing I did want to ask you, actually, is whether you think there's any significance to Chris McNeil being an actress.
I don't know.
It's something that has always sort of bugged me about the movie, and it's probably just coming from watching movies, like modern movies now. Like, everything is so intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the very least, everything has to be explained. There has to be a reason for everything. It's not just that it would be fun to see a character who's also an actress have something awful happen to her.
Yeah, I think about that every single time we watch it because it just seems like such a specific career choice for her to have.
And for us to follow her to set. It's not just we talk about her being an actress.
Yeah, like we see her film a scene. It's a protest scene. I don't know. It's very interesting because maybe it's supposed to further kind of lean into this thing about fate and how like everything is lining up, because there is kind of this faded thing about Father Karis losing his faith but being the person who's supposed to do the exorcist, because that's how he sees her for the first time and she sees him and she walks past.
There is a moment where they recognize each other.
Yeah, there's.
And he's just like he looks back as he's walking away.
Yeah, everybody has a sense of fate in the movie. And maybe that's just another thing that it's just like the universe brought her to live here, to be in this town.
Oh, okay.
To like her set makes her walk past his parish.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's it. But I also think there's other elements too, like something about her being like an affluent woman who's on her own. She's famous, so it's very insulating. She has her guard up naturally, but she's also like a powerful woman, so she's okay to speak up, you know, to the medical professionals.
Yeah.
And she's the right mom to be defending her daughter with the medical professionals, with the priests. So I think it's good for her personality. I think she's the right woman for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And also butting up against that cop who's actually a fan of hers. Like, there's some really unique situations she's put in because she is a woman who's recognizable.
Yeah. It's really, I never thought about the fact that, like, yeah, so they're all chess pieces on a board moving toward a conclusion or something, right?
Moving towards the devil coming out in, like, I don't know what the devil's... Every single, like, demon possession movie, I'm like, what does the devil ultimately want? And I think Karis Astley's like, what do you want? And she's like, I don't know. In time or some shit.
In time.
Yeah.
I think she's like, I want to... Like, I think it's just the ultimate evil. It's just, like, killing a little girl. Making everybody question their faith and then letting a little girl die is maybe like the ultimate cruelty.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, no, she didn't.
She just wants to make her little clay animals and live her best life.
Talk about fucking horses.
Anyway,
yeah, so, but what's interesting, I never necessarily thought about that aspect of it because Karis also, or no, it's not Karis, it's Damien. Is it Karis?
Karis is the brown-haired one. Marin is the...
Marin is the old one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is not actually old.
Oh, man. So the best aging makeup of all time.
Yeah, and like here's another point for 4K stuff. Like, sometimes you watch movies that have been...
You're like, we should not have enhanced
this. No, yeah. Like, you just see so many mistakes. The makeup looks great. The makeup
you're
still
like,
looks
holy
good.
Holy hell, this holds up. Like, yeah. It's a combination, too, though. You were saying this while we were watching. It's a combination of his physicality and his performance.
Oh,
like,
my God.
He does a really great job of looking like an old man with a heart condition.
Yeah, just the way he carries himself. Like,
hunching his shoulders.
Yes, just standing up from digging a hole in the dirt. And you're like, this man is in pain just walking around.
The aging makeup is seamless.
Yeah.
So good.
It's incredible. But Karis is also not a Washington native. He's from New York. He doesn't want to be where he is
because he's been assigned here.
Yeah, he's a priest that became a psychiatrist for the church. He hates his job. It's taking so much out of him. He can't be near his mother. It's not home for him. And he's taken the train back to go see his mom as often as he can. Not often enough, obviously. It hurts him. It pains him. But he's also stuck here the same way that, you know, Chris McNeil is kind of quote unquote stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
So they really are colliding at the perfect time.
Yeah, I think pieces on a chessboard being like brought towards each other is a really interesting thought. And it's always great to have fate in things that are so profound. Like when you're going biblical and you're adding demons and stuff, that uncanny feeling is... It just fits so perfectly.
Yeah, where you're sort of just like foot soldiers in a bigger, larger war that's happening that you can't see, that you don't know anything about.
Well, yeah, and especially like as a parent of somebody, of a child who's either being possessed by the devil or going through a mental illness, that sense of powerlessness is so magnified when it feels like the universe is colluding for this to happen.
Oh, man. And if it were an actual genuine medical problem, that's still what it would feel like.
Exactly. The movie doesn't change, really, whether or not it's a medical issue or a metaphysical issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The movie does take a stance. Like, I will say, like, Reagan...
I think it's undeniable at some point.
Yeah, like, Reagan's talking in different voices. She's talking backwards. She's impersonating Karis's mom. She's writing inside out on her body.
Oh, my God.
She's stabbed... Well, I guess that could just be mental illness, the stabby. But, like, the bed rocking... levitating. There's some paranormal shit happening.
I love when she finally gets the doctors to the house to do a house call, and they've exhausted everything, and they finally see the like her whipping around in the bed. The bed's rattling, and there's just like a quiet moment, and they're like, we still think it might be the frontal lobe. Like, they've got fucking nothing, right?
It is great, though, that these people who have dedicated their lives to science can't see the other side.
Uh-huh.
But they do recommend that she get an exorcism, but purely for, like, placebo effects,
psychosomatic reasons.
I mean, maybe that's what, under the guise of what they're saying. Like, they're like, yeah, maybe she needs an exorcism because of science things still, but that girl needs the Lord.
That girl's got the devil in her.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, maybe horror, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow, they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know, even the weird ones. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site. And by gifts, I mean things I bought for me. We got a whole bunch of different mystery things. They have a really great mystery section on their website with puzzles, card games, and kind of like at-home escape rooms. So we have a whole bunch of those coming. I cannot wait for. They're definitely not going to make it till Christmas. But when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nightmare. That's uncommongoods.com/nightmare for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is also interesting when we think about the pieces on the chessboard, because they aren't in the town where Father Marin is. Like, he's called in from up in Woodstock, I think is where they said he's staying. He's working on a new book. He's basically, like you were mentioning while we were watching it, he's just hanging out waiting for somebody to call,
yeah,
right?
So because this movie has so much in it, it does feel like there are things cut out or just like missing. I think there is a lack of us seeing the process of being like, okay, this girl needs an exorcism, and Karis having to convince the diocese or whoever it is,
yeah,
to let him have an exorcism and also be part of the exorcism. We have a couple, maybe it's just one scene where he's meeting and they're,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
they're like, I don't know, and then they call in Marin and it's like shows on the road.
Yeah, we've got 20 minutes left in the movie when he shows up, and he's got such an entrance. Like, all of us, like, that's when we hear tubular bells and the fog machine's going and the lights coming,
oh,
down,
yeah,
from behind the house.
And they're
the
like,
house.
This is the motherfucking poster, bitch.
Yeah, and he's basically just like pulling out his fucking guns. He's rolling up his sleeves like, let's do this, you know? And like, I think that's who we always assume is the exorcist. But I don't think that's true.
I
think Father Karis is the exorcist.
Yeah, I think it's a complicated situation. I think it's about passing the torch. Like, I think it's about, it is Marin at first. He is the exorcist, and it has to come to Karis to believe.
Yeah, it is all, it is, it's, man, it's such a great story. Like, for somebody to get their faith back. And then, but to then also essentially just die immediately.
I mean, at least it happened before it happened.
Oh, at least it happened before. It could be a lot worse. But even when he goes to see Reagan for, not for the first time, but like when he's starting to like do some exploratory exorcist sort of research.
Some recon on the devil.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, this is where he shows up with regular tap water, pretends it's holy water, and she still reacts all
crazy.
What
is your feedback, or what is your thoughts on that scene when he tells Chris, like, oh, it's just tap water?
Yeah. I think that the demon is obviously on to him and knows everything. Like, the demon knows a lot about him. It's fucking talking in his mom's voice.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite moments is when it talks in the voice of a homeless guy that he just sort of passes by in New York. That is truly like a scene in this movie that always stops me dead cold in my tracks. Because he's in New York. He's like, come on, Father. Can you spare some change for an old altar boy? And it's that exact voice that the demon uses when he sees her for the first time. Which either implies that it knows something that he feels guilty about, or he's dead and in hell. And that's how they can use his voice.
Oh my God. I,
yeah,
never even thought of that.
Right? And maybe if he had just spared him some change, or just a little, like, been more of a good Samaritan to him, he wouldn't be dead. Kind of like how his mom wouldn't be dead. Not that that's his fault, but that's how he feels.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think the demon is so smart, and in that moment, it's pretending that it's holy water, because it knows that when he brings this evidence back to the church, they won't bring in the big bad guns.
Really coincidental. I learned something really interesting about holy water, that if you have, say, like a half a vial of holy water, you can fill it up to 50% with tap water, and the whole bottle is still considered holy water.
Oh, there's a dilution point?
There is a dilution point. It's like homeopathic.
Okay.
But I think there's something to the fact that it's, if you believe it is holy water, then it is. Because a lot of this movie is Chris being told, your daughter believes she's possessed, so she is.
Yeah.
I think there's something interesting there. I don't know quite what it is. I haven't fully figured it out.
Uh-huh. Maybe 30 or 40 more times we'll get there.
Exactly. About it becoming holy water in the process of believing that it is.
Yeah. Man.
Like, if the devil believes it's holy water, shouldn't that be pretty powerful?
But isn't the devil smart enough to know that it's not? Like, that's the other thing. Okay,
if water is being yielded by a priest, does that not make it holy?
This is if a tree falls in the woods.
But if a priest does not have faith, does the holy water...
there's the question, right? Now, there is also a great moment in that sequence where the demon, the devil, says that it welcomes an exorcism. It wants the exorcism because it'll bring us closer together. You know, not me and Reagan, but me and you. Like, it knows the score. It knows what's gonna happen.
I don't know if it knows.
I think it does. I think it knows, and I think it hopes. I think there's a brief moment when he takes the demon into himself, or the devil into himself.
Yeah, and he looks like mid-American Werewolf in London transformation.
Yes, the eyes look amazing. And yeah. He goes to strangle Reagan, which would be so fucking brutal for this girl to finally get an exorcism and then also to just be like, to have the life strangled out of her by this priest. And he's able to pull it back. And that's why his eyes change back to like the regular human eyes. And then that's the moment where he just throws himself out the window.
To the danger. Danger stairs.
Yeah, but it's okay. It's not. It's kind of a suicide. But we do get our last rites and our confession before we go. So everything's OBKB as far as the Catholic Church is concerned, because suicide's a big no-no.
So you think? What do you think the demon knows? All of this?
I think so.
I don't know why possess if you're just going to get smushed out at the bottom of a stairwell.
I don't think it knows the stairwell part. So okay. that's the Kansas City shuffle, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I think it knows that at that point, now it gets to also kill Reagan and be in this priest.
Well, yeah, I think that for a demon, like, it's grand to possess a little girl, but how great would it be to be inside a priest?
Yeah. Especially one that's so racked with guilt. And that's also the reason why
I think that's a juicy dinner for a demon.
Absolutely.
Right? You want that. You want that, like, that is food for you, is the guilt and the shame. And
that's what
who,
it wants.
Yeah, like, who has more guilt or shame?
they even talk about that in the movie too, about how that's when it can, or when it does, get inside you. And there's a very quiet, very subtle little moment.
This is something I don't think I've ever noticed before. Either. But you brought up on this watch, and I think it is 100% right.
Yeah, so the way it's all edited together, and I'll just try and like go over this real quick, because it's like such a small moment. It's when...
Just great character stuff, is great for the story.
Yeah, Chris and Reagan are talking about what they're going to do for her birthday and how much fun they're going to have.
We're going to go see the sights.
Exactly, yeah. And we're going to go shopping and stuff. And then the next scene is Chris on the phone with Reagan's father. She's not even on the phone with him. She's like yelling at a hotel clerk in Rome, trying to get him on the phone to talk to her on her birthday. And she's freaking the fuck out, rightfully so. But it's taking over the whole day. It's ruining everything. And Reagan, either sad that her father doesn't want to talk to her, like probably sad that her dad doesn't want to talk to her, and sort of sad that the day's ruined completely, just like quietly goes off into her room and starts taking her shoes off, because she's either not going out anymore, or she doesn't want to go out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably feels like that's her fault, because there is like this quiet sad moment where she does sort of express that she thinks the divorce is kind of her fault.
Yeah, well, and at that age you're so impressionable.
Yeah.
Like, if your dad doesn't want to be part of your life, your first thought is going to be like, what about me? Is it that he doesn't want
exactly.
to be my dad anymore?
And it's that low point that the fucking devil gets in. There's a couple questions here that I do want to ask before we go. One is a question you actually asked me during the movie that I don't have a genuine answer for. Do you think Reagan is the person that desecrates the church at the beginning?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
This is why I think I ask you this every single time we watch it, because it's a very interesting desecration.
Yeah. It's like melted pylons on
like,
a statue,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it looks like melted pylons. Is it just supposed to be...
I love that you're tapping the desk. Like,
I'm
this
sorry.
Is real important.
I'm really intense about this, because it's something I have always wondered, and I'm sure it's answered in the fucking book, and I've read the book, and I should fucking remember. We have the book.
Oh.
It's somewhere in the other room.
Okay.
Is it just supposed to signify a point of turmoil and kind of, you know, life out there is life in here? Like, there's a crisis of faith happening outside. People aren't respecting the church. Kind of like, it's the right climate for this type of thing to be happening.
Oh, yeah.
Because also, too, the film scenes, it's a protest. Like, there's unrest in the movie.
There's unrest in Iraq. There's also just unrest in America at the time. Like, I think it's one of, it's kind of like Suspiria, like the 2018 Suspiria, but how he talked about, like, the tide turning and the power shifting. Like,
yeah, I
think
I tried
that's
to repeat the line, like the something out there and the something in here, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
It's a great line.
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. Yeah.
So
do we think Reagan just like quietly crept off into the church? I don't know.
I feel like that's unlikely.
I think so too.
But it does have that feeling of foreboding, like the devil got in.
I think it's the devil pulling a prank, 100%. The same way that I think it's like an angel that takes the crucifix and brings it up to Reagan's room. Because we clearly see that crucifix in the foyer, and nobody else brought it up, but it makes its way up there and ultimately becomes...
I think Pazuzu got it.
Yeah, well, I think Pazuzu got it once it got in the room. I think maybe a force, an angel, or a force.
You mean the first
good.
Time when she's like, who put this in here? There's a moment where she goes to answer the door and she just sets the crucifix down,
and then
later,
it's
like,
upstairs.
Reagan's like fucking herself with it.
Yeah.
I think that's fully just like, look what the devil can do. Like, he can just apparate it up. I don't think there's an angel being like, and one blessing for you.
But Kim, have you forgotten the introduction from director William Friedkin at the beginning of the movie where he talked about, like, you bring what you believe to the movie. And, you know, if you think the world's a dark place, you'll find evidence for that here. But if you believe that there are forces of good out there, then you'll see what we were trying to make when we made this movie. I don't believe him for a second. I don't think that he was trying to make a movie about how there are angels in America that are here looking out for us.
No, I think it is a positive ending, even though everyone you love dies in it.
Yeah. Okay, so rapid fire. I got a couple quick questions that I want to ask, but I know we're running long here.
Are we?
A little.
Because I feel like we haven't talked about anything yet.
This is the problem when you talk about a movie you've seen 100,000 times. You get stuck in, like, little tiny details.
Mm.
But I think this will solve some of the things we haven't mentioned yet. Number one. What do you think is the scariest scene in the movie?
The scariest scene in the movie for me is when Father Karras comes back in the bedroom and Father Marin has died.
Oh.
And Reagan is untied, full possession at this point. So I'll just say the devil is untied and is in the back corner of the bed, just like giggling gleefully. First,
she's dead silent.
There's this weird look of like a cat who's caught a mouse and didn't expect the mouse to die.
She's
like a cat who was just like playing with a mouse and then it's like, oh, the game is over.
Yes.
Like a little bit of disappointment, but also a little like, it's like a little bit of a shame. It's a little bit of disappointment. I don't know. It's raw and really carnal. And then she giggles. It's too much for a 12-year-old girl to be able to emote on her face.
She does an incredible job.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and like the visual performance is all Linda Blair. And like, we know that there is a voice actor who's overdubbing a lot of her dialogue, where we get a lot of the voice of Pazuzu and the demons, and she did an incredible job. I listened to an interview with her once. And she went places to get that performance. Like, she's like locked in a room, smoking like a pack of cigarettes and like gargling whiskey and just like doing all kinds of crazy shit to get into like the demon voice.
The voice is really good and it does sound like it's coming from Reagan.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It was a really great performance and like pairing of the two.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like but everything you see on screen is 100% Linda Blair, and she's doing an amazing work.
There is, though, there is another actress who did the stunts and stuff, and it's been argued that she did way more than she was credited for.
We see her face so much in this movie, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and well, there's stuff that you couldn't, just in terms of stunts, that you couldn't have a 12-year-old girl doing. Like, that stuff where they have her flipping on the bed, where she's, like, going, like, wah, mother, mother! Like,
I'm pretty certain that's where she fucked her backup.
Oh, like, is it?
I think that's actually her. I think she actually got hurt.
I thought she fucked her backup when the bed was shaking, not when she was doing like the...
Oh, I mean, maybe... I'm not entirely sure. You're right. That could have been a different actress because we don't see her face. My guess is if I had to put money on it, I'd say it's a stunt actress because Linda Blair was in the hospital at the time. The same way that Ellen Burstyn wound up in the hospital because they yanked her way too fucking
hard. Yeah,
didn't
she like break her coccyx or whatever? Yeah. Like that butt bone thing?
Injured for life.
Oh, man. Great shot, though, and they used it in the
great
film.
Great shot. I'd say like my favorite scene, I've talked about it already, is the nightmare sequence. I think it's utterly terrifying.
You love a nightmare
sequence.
I'm
a connoisseur of nightmare sequences. It's the sound design too in all of it that sounds amazing. Like I talked about it a bit at the beginning. It's a strange movie to be so scary without having an iconic scary score. Mm. And it all comes down to the sound design, the sound mixing. It's truly incredible.
So two things I want to say to that. I really love the dream sequence because I think it further moves along that faded thing that we're talking about, because there's the necklace and all that comes into play.
I could talk about
the
necklace for 40 minutes.
But what you're saying about sound design is really great, and I think there's a really great example of it is during all of those medical scenes, how they let them be so silent.
Oh,
and
man.
It feels like it really transports you into those scenes. You feel like you yourself are having a medical procedure done just because like you're seeing them insert the needle. You're seeing like the initial blood spurt. You're hearing like the dun 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 dun.
Oh man, it's punishing.
Of the old brain tech. It is very raw in that sense, and it's so stark and quiet. Maybe those are some of my favorite scenes of the movie.
Those are apparently the scenes where people would, you know, the people that fainted or like walked out of the theater because it was too much. Apparently it was those sequences.
I can see that. You don't go in a supernatural horror film expecting to come out with medical trauma. But
no. That medical stuff is integral to the movie, though, because they do an incredible job of just like knocking down all the things you think it could possibly be. Like it's going through like the Sherlock Holmes checklist.
I love that stuff just because it's scary enough in its own right. Like, there's a whole horror movie there of her just not finding answers as to what's wrong with her daughter.
Yeah.
That makes it so that if it was ambiguous, you don't feel any less scared for Reagan and you don't feel any less bad for Chris, because the journey they're going through and the fact that they have to go through the test again and they have to do a different test because we didn't see the things on the brain that we were expecting, but we still think it's this thing and we have to rule it out. Like, anybody who's ever had to have a procedure before or who's had like a medical mystery can feel these scenes in their gut. And it's a very real horror.
It also takes away all the skepticism where you're like, oh, it's probably this, it could be this, I mean, it's probably that. That all gets knocked away and it's completely, it solves no problem. So inevitably we end up pigeonholing ourselves into the only possible explanation, demon possession.
Yeah, well, I think too, because the McNeil family isn't a religious family.
Nah.
So you would have to take them to the precipice. Like, you would have to show them that this is fully supernatural, like by a girl, you know, like floating on a bed,
right,
for her to get to the point where she's considering exorcism.
Yeah.
Like, she's just like, I just want to help my daughter. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, do whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, I might not even believe in God after you're done, but let's get her well.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think makes this movie so much scarier and so much more effective than literally every other possession movie, exorcism movie ever? Is it just that it was the first one? Because I don't believe that's true. I think it's just so well fucking made.
So I think it's a combination of those things. I think it had a level of novelty to it.
Yeah.
But it is also just really well written. And I think the fact that the screenplay was written by William Blatty or Peter F. Blatty?
William Peter Blatty.
I did pretty good.
You nailed it.
I was pretty wrong, but I was pretty right. The fact that the original themes kind of were retained and intact and there was like a full source material. Like, he had meditated with those characters for years because he wrote the original novel. It took a while to get the film off the ground. So he really wanted to be a part of the film. He either wanted to be a producer so he could have some say on it, or he wanted
to write
the screenplay.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not great when the fiction writer does the screenplay because it's hard to translate fiction to screen and it's a different writing style. There's a lot like less is more in cinema and more is less. less in fiction.
Well, you have more time to stretch out character development too.
But the characters are so interesting and fleshed out, and they weave together in a really interesting way. So the movie is so watchable regardless of the horror elements, regardless of the possession. Like, I think I would love to just see, you know, Chris on a movie set just because she's such an interesting woman.
Yeah. I think some of it comes down to belief. Like, you believe in the characters, you buy into the characters, you're invested in them, but also the characters themselves believe, which is great because we literally have a guy who's like, I think I've lost my faith. But the sequence where they, like, we all joke about it now because it's just, it's practically a trope now. Like, the power of Christ compels you. Like, it should be boring seeing them shout that 36 times in a row. It is truly one of the best scenes of the movie. And it's...
Well, she does levitate.
Sure, she's levitating. She looks spooky. But it's in how they say it, you know? It's like in the repetition of
compels
it.
Compels you!
Yeah, well, every single time they say it...
Lots of spitting.
There's
compels you!
There's a lot of spitting. There's a lot of cold breath in these scenes, which I gotta say was probably a nightmare when you think about how much crew was in the room and you can't get anybody else's breath on camera. I bet that happened a bunch and I bet it ruined a lot of takes. But every single time they say it, it means something different. Every single time. And I just think it's the power of their performance in that scene that makes it so good. Because this exact scene is in every fucking movie and I hate it almost every time. And it's probably also true that this movie is just smart enough to know that, like, immediately after this, we have a huge loss. You know, like, this is a good win for us. But afterward, we're exhausted, we're beaten, we're bruised, we might not make it out of here, and we still got to go back in and fight this fucking thing one more time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think ultimately, yeah, it comes down to the performances. Like, we believe them because they believe what's happening to them in the moment.
Yeah, and I think The Exorcist 2 knows that the exorcism itself is maybe the least interesting portion of the exorcism. So that's why most of it is the journey there. It's convincing all of these characters that were possessed. Yep. It is this girl going through this possession. It's the priest trying to get on board with it and wrestling with his faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the human moments that make The Exorcist what it is. Whereas I think a lot of modern day films are just following the exorcism formula.
Mm-hmm.
You know, possession, climbing up the walls, bending backwards, a little bit of contortion, and then like a lot of yelling.
And we're out.
And then a lot of yelling at a teenage actress.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Do you think the same way? Like,
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it also helps a little bit that there's some novelty to it. Like, there's a whole chunk of this movie where they're explaining what demon possession is.
Yeah, and like that. Oh, like some things we used to do but don't do anymore is an exorcism. Like, that was something that was kind of remarkable to me because we're just so used to like, oh, you're possessed by the devil, like go get an exorcism.
Yeah,
they always say how hard it is, but they seem to be happening all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, exorcisms are fucking rare, especially in North America. You have to be very, and especially a modern day one when we have, you know, like the advent of mental health.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of why the church has psychologists employed.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times it's not the devil.
And that's why there's one here. Man, that's what makes him such a great character. Because he's just like, hey, I got to tell you, she probably just needs to go to the hospital. Like the whole time. Like even after he sees her, he's like, I don't think it's the devil. last question. Theatrical cut or unrated director's cut? What do you think is scarier and or better?
This is difficult because I love me a hidden Pazuzu. I love the backwards down the stairs.
Oh yeah, you can't. Unfortunately, you can't really beat the backwards down the stairs scheme.
It's,
you know?
It's just good stuff. But I do like that the original cut boogies. It's really well paced. I think the original reason why the stairs thing was cut out was freaking thought it came too early in the movie. Like, it was just too much too soon. It was too heavy, too hard. So you kind of want to stay with the director's original vision. It's funny that it's called the director's cut that has it in. Because for the longest time, I think he was like, no, we never filmed that. We never filmed it. We were going to do a stairs crawl thing, but we never did it. And then they found it and they were like, we're putting it in.
I guess we have it. Yeah, I had heard him mention in an interview somewhere that it was partly like a favor to William Peter Blatty to put some of that stuff back in. The extra Pazuzus, I don't know how I feel about them. Like, I've grown up with them. It's always been there for me. I think it's...
And it, especially, too, we were watching the theatrical cut, and I knew there were less Pazuzus, but it didn't stop me from being like, it's right there, though, in the other
one. Yeah, but in the other one, it's right here
it's
in the stove.
It's on that hook face. It's in the attic.
But I don't think I ever not... Like, I don't think there was ever a time where I watched it and didn't see them. Like, I think if it was, like, a Fight Club situation where you had seen this movie a bunch of times and somebody finally pointed it out to you, and you're like, whoa, that's crazy. That was there the whole time?
The internet ruined the Easter egg.
Yeah. Well, that and, like, the featurettes that played before the VHS that you rented from the store shows you where all the Pazuzus are. You're like, oh, wow, this is crazy, yeah. So, I don't know. I also have never loved the very, very end of the movie where we see the other priest meet up with the detective and they have, like, a cool little chat after Reagan and her mom have fucked off out of the movie. You're like, the lead characters are gone, but for 10 more minutes, we're going to talk about movies and how it's good that she doesn't remember. And, yeah, you know, like, it's just, it's too long at the end of the movie. So I like how quickly it ends here.
I do like that third priest, though. He isn't in the movie enough. He just looks like a nice guy.
He does look like a nice guy.
Yeah.
I like the detective. I love when he gets her autograph. And he's like, yeah, can you sign this for my daughter?
When he asks for more coffee. And like,
she's just
the
like,
fucking look she gives him.
He can't take a fucking hint.
Oh, it's such a good movie. Oh.
It's incredible.
I love watching this movie. And it's weird because everybody talks about how monumental it is and how it's like one of the most quintessential horror films, and you're like, yeah, it totally is. And
yeah,
then,
I guess, yeah, sure, of
and
course.
Then you're watching it and you're just like, damn, this is good.
Yeah, undeniable.
Damn, this is a solid movie.
Yeah, no, it's an unquestionable 4 out of 4 from me.
Yeah, both of us.
Yeah, goddamn, always delivers. But that's just our opinion from two people who have watched this movie 100,000 times. You have probably also seen this movie a whole bunch. We'd love to hear what you thought of it, especially if you rewatched it over the Halloween break. I mean, I said that like it was summer vacation.
It is summer vacation.
It kind of is. Yeah, absolutely. If you rewatch this movie around Halloween, I'd love to hear your thoughts on your reevaluation. And also, obviously, theatrical or director's cut. Like, what do you think is the better version of this movie? Right now, we're saying theatrical. Next year, we might say we're back on director's cut. Who knows? What we need is a fan edit that includes the spider walk later in the movie, maybe one Pazuzu. Like, I just want to cherry pick a couple details from that the director's cut.
Or some new Pazuzus.
Yeah.
So you're not expecting them. Yeah.
I like that idea.
New Zuzus.
Yeah. One of the Pazuzu faces is in the crowd at the beginning when she's like filming on set.
A protesting Pazuzu.
Yeah. Or one's hidden on that, like, that nun that's walking down the street when she's going home on Halloween night and those kids are running by in their Halloween costumes. Yeah, so this is obviously a favorite of ours, and it's absolutely why we included it in the Cocktails from the Crypt book that's coming out soon.
In our Satanist chapter.
That's right. We got a whole bunch of satanic drinks. The chapter's called 666 Sips, and we close out that chapter with the Pazuzu Punch. It's delicious. It's green. The photo recreates the scene where Reagan's getting her exorcism on the bed. Like Kim mentioned earlier, it's
serves... You mean her exorcism or her ectoplasm?
yeah, both, basically, yeah. It's a really nice punch. It's not just your standard 7-Up punch, which are also delicious. I'm a big fan.
And there's one in the book.
I can't shit on them too much. No, this one's great. It's like gin and elderflower liqueur, as well as green sugar. Chartreuse to give it that color, but oh man, does it give it like this great herbal scent. We also garnish the sucker with some cayenne pepper, which it gives it a kick, and it also just gives it a look for a scene that it's reminiscent of a scene that I find hard to watch in this movie. You can find all the details of that cocktail and more info on where to pre-order your copy of the book at nofspodcast.com/go. It's a link in this podcast wherever you're listening to it.
Cocktails from the Crypt is out November 26th. Join us for our virtual launch party on November 27th. All the details will be posted on our social media. If you are in Winnipeg, Manitoba, join us on November 30th for our Canada launch party and December 7th in Kansas City, Missouri at Screenland Armor for our U.S. launch party. We're going to be watching movies slinging custom cocktails, yeah, doing book signings, and chatting about some cool horror movies.
Yeah, I'm really excited for... I'm excited for both of those, but, like, I'm really excited for the Raven's End event because I'm Canadian, I guess. But also because, like, we've got a couple different cocktails and we're letting people vote on what movie we'll be talking about, what movie we'll be watching based on what drinks they're ordering. Raven's End is also the local horror bookstore that we've partnered with for signed copies of the book. If you pre-ordered a copy on Barnes & Noble or Amazon or wherever, we will send you a signed plate to include in the book. But if you want the actual book signed and doodled on by us, you can find links for that at nofspodcast.com/go by pre-ordering through Raven's End. You support our local horror hangout and you get a signed copy of the book, no extra charge.
That's it from us this week. We'll be back at you next week with another crypt pick and a film that is featured in the book. But until then, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.